This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz. This program is sponsored by New Zealand Bridge, sponsors of Grassroots Bridge across the nation.
Welcome to the Bridge Zone. You're at the table with Barry and Mariana. We get our directors back next week, Barry.
That's good. I've got a question that came up on the weekend. I don't know whether I want to talk about it or not.
Maybe we could pre-warn them about it.
It was an interesting situation, actually. What happened was we were defending and Declara called for the four of spades from dummy. And my partner followed with the three of spades.
Yeah.
And Declara said, "Oh, no, no, I meant the four of clubs." And it was the added factor that there was no four of spades in dummy. It was only the 10 and the 7. So they called for the 4. My partner followed with the 3. So then we got the director of the table. Julie would be so proud. And it was a bit of a tricky situation. I'm not sure whether the director quite got it right or not. I don't know.
When you call for a card and they want to change their mind, the one that they want to change their mind to wasn't in dummy.
No. The card they called for wasn't in dummy.
Oh.
Oh, I tell you, there's always something new happening at the bridge table. So be careful what you wish for, because you call for the four of spades and it isn't there. It gets tricky.
We'll pass situation. On that. And we'll give it to the experts. I agree.
Give it to Judge Julie and see what she says.
You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, know when to
My
run.
Tip for this week, are you ready?
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
It's stolen.
Oh, It's stolen from
Adam Parrish, and he was talking about preempts and overcalls. And it's tricky, you know, sometimes when you've got six nice clubs and you're thinking, you'd like to open a week two in clubs. Yeah, well, you better not, because partner will think you've got a game for, so you can't do that. So sometimes people will stretch and open three clubs with only a six-card suit. And if you happen to be playing that two diamonds has got some meaning other than diamonds, which a lot of people will, where maybe they play it as a multi-two or maybe they play it as Flannery or whatever, you might preempt three diamonds on a six-card suit. So what Adam was saying was that this is a flaw when you've only got a six-card suit, that if you've got a flaw like that, you really want things to be in your favour, particularly if you're not vul against vul.
Yeah.
So if you're not vul against vul, I mean, this is a very special situation. If you're ever going to get a bit frisky, that's the time. And you often notice people opening a week two on a five-card suit when they're in that situation. So vulnerability is important, and you don't want to have something else. Like if you've got a six-card club suit or a six-card diamond suit, but you've got a four-card major on the side, that's probably not a good time to do it, I would suggest. Although some people, you know, roll the dice and try it.
Yep.
So preempting with a six-card suit, it's not illegal yet.
Preempting with a five-card suit, I don't know if I could actually do that either.
Yeah, well, it must have been the day when, you know, I was getting a bit bored.
Really?
well, like I say, when you're not vul against vul, it's amazing what you can get away with. Next time you're playing, how many times, I should know this, that you are not vul against vul? I guess that's probably about six times you'll be not vul against vul in the session. Yeah. Make the most of it. Cause your opponents grief, because there's a bit more room for error. If you get doubled and go for 500, that's still not the value of their vulnerable game of 600.
I see. What are you saying? It's called a flaw.
Well, it's a flaw if you preempt to the three level with only a six-card suit. You want the rest of your hand to be pure. You certainly don't want to have a four-card major, and you know, you probably want most of your values in your suit. But green against red, just about anything goes the top level these days.
Whoa, here he comes again.
Fast thing.
Who's that with
me?
Ethel? Is that you, Ethel? Where do you think you're going?
Of his anatomy.
You get your clothes on.
Okay, Peter Hollins, he had a quick review on the World Champs every day. He's really good. He's very animated. He makes it very exciting. And on the final day, you'll hear it soon, listeners, is his wrap-up of the World Champs. But he actually mentioned a hand, Barry. They bid into seven clubs with a six-card fit.
How did that go for them?
It went very well because they made it.
Oh, okay.
And he was smiling about it and laughing about it because he said, have you ever bid a grand slam and the opponents have more clubs than you have and make it? It was pretty
they
cool.
Must have been. I didn't see that hand. They must have been good ones.
They were. Let's go there right now.
So the Bridge World Championships are over. We have new world champions. The finals of most of these matches were absolutely incredible to watch. And I have an absolutely fascinating hand to show you. This actually highlights the runners-up, but it was just a glorious hand. So let's jump in. And in the Bermuda Bowl, it was USA 1 versus Denmark. Here, North-South bid to 7 diamonds on this hand. They ended up in 7 diamonds in a 5-2 fit, and the Queen of Diamonds is offside. So this went down. At the other table, though, you'll never guess where they ended up. They finished in 7 clubs. They played in a 5-1 fit at the 7 level. So the opponents have more trumps than them, and they're playing in 7 clubs. But even still, can this even make? You don't have any club losers, but the spades don't break, the diamond finesse fails. You can't really rough things out. So what actually happened here? So they got a club lead, and they cashed the ace, king of hearts, and then they went over and drew trumps. So they cashed all these clubs, but when they cashed a couple of spades, now they play the final club and actually do a double squeeze here. Now, here, it's only West that is actually getting squeezed on this hand, but if they had 3 diamonds to the queen, they would have to come down to abandoning hearts or shortening their diamonds to only 2. Here, West is guarding spades and diamonds, and they have to choose, do they protect spades? If they throw the jack of spades, then the 8 of spades is high. The other hand, if they throw a diamond, which they do at the table, now the declarer can just play ace, king of diamonds, jack of diamonds, and they know that neither player can actually guard diamonds. So they managed to make 7 clubs in a 5-1 fit. Have you ever seen someone bid to a grand slam with only 6 trumps combined, but then make it on a double squeeze? Absolutely incredible. This was a 17 imp pickup for Denmark. Let's take a look at results. So in the Bermuda Bowl, the Open, USA 1 ended up winning by 17 imps. It was big back and forth day there, but USA 1 went on to become our world champions. In the Venice Cup, Netherlands was down about 50 at the halfway point, but had a really strong day to end up plus 40-ish here. In the seniors, USA 1 beat France. And in the mixed, Italy beat China. So let's take a look at the transnationals. So here, SBS Construction beat Shuri by just 6 imps. And then in the border match finals, Rosenthal went on to win the ban.
Listeners, you need to check out this deal. So you'll be able to find it. Look up Peter Hollands on YouTube and click into his shorts menu. Have a look. It's a fantastic hand and he describes it magically. Coming up next is the Waikato Bay's main regional Swiss Pairs, being hosted by the Hamilton Bridge Club. What are the entries like?
Sensational. We're going to have to use both rooms.
Oh, how good is that?
Still time to enter. 50 pairs, 25 tables.
Wow, that's great.
You know, there's still time to enter. I think entries are open till Thursday.
Yeah, sure.
We'll probably be using our other room, so we'll fit you in no problem at all.
Nice. And who's our director this weekend?
I believe it's Nick Saunders.
Oh, very good. I wonder which bow tie he's going to wear this week.
Indeed. It's always quite tough, I imagine, directing an event like that where you've got all these draws to worry about and you need to get people back and playing so that they, you know, it doesn't drag on for too long. They're going to probably have 6 matches or something. There's going to be all these gaps in between while we're trying to get the draw out, trying to get people underway as soon as we can.
Absolutely. Does it have an early start?
No, we don't do early starts in the Waikato. It's a 10 o'clock start. We're very civilized. Not like some nearby provinces that have these 9:30 starts in the morning. Why would you do that?
I don't know.
Big event in the weekend, or the main event in the weekend, was the South Island teams.
Oh, yes. How did that go?
That was won pretty easily by the Stout team. They never lost a match all day. And they finished on 120 VPs, which was exactly 31 VPs ahead of the second team. which was the Wu team. So the Stout team was Graham Stout, Glenn Coutts, Sam Coutts, Bradley Johnston. And the Wu team was Mindy Wu and Sandra Coleman with Margaret Purley and Paul Freeland, who only lost one match all day.
Oh, well done. Haven't seen Bradley for a while.
The 20 teams took part. It was in Dunedin. There's hardly anybody from the North Island there this year. There were a few Wellington players. They were a bit thin on the ground in Dunedin. And you'd be aware of this, Mariana, from all your trips down there. Maybe the cost of a flight to Dunedin's too steep.
If you book them early enough, it's okay. And here's a little sideline. Our young fella turns 13 this month, Barry. And it's his last year at intermediate. And he plays a bit of rugby, and he made the Otago rep team. His club is Alejandra, which is right by the varsity, and they had prize giving on the weekend. And Lincoln took out the Spirit Award, which is awarded to the best player in the junior club. And he was absolutely rapt. He had a fantastic season. How about that?
I just want to emphasise here is that for all our listeners who are doing the maths, that Mariana is the grandmother of a teenager.
And congratulations to Paul Hangartner. Had a nice rounded number birthday last month and has just recently become a grandfather. How cool is that?
It's very cool.
I bet you he'll be teaching that grandchild bridge.
My name is Gavin Wolpert. I was born in Toronto, Canada, to a bridge playing family. I lived in Toronto and trained on the Canadian junior bridge team and then moved now to Florida, where I live with my wife and my three kids playing professional
bridge.
Hello,
everybody. It is time for interactive problem number 20. Now, on this hand, I actually think that there's something equally important in the bidding as there is in the play. So I'm going to start just by talking you through an interesting lesson in the bidding. So it went pass on my right, and as you can see, I chose to open one spade with this south hand. A lot of you guys might open two spades or not open at all. I kind of live by the philosophy that if I perceive my hand to be too strong for a weak two bid, that means that I'm strong enough to open one. And I thought with two aces outside that this hand was worth a one bid. If you're not comfortable opening 10-point hands like this that don't qualify for the rule of 20, it's no big deal. That's not the lesson of the hand. So I opened a spade. It went two club over call on my left, and my partner raised to two spades. Now, you could argue that that hand with a nice 10-point hand and a doubleton was actually worth a limit raise and bidding three clubs. Now, maybe my partner is used to me opening a little bit more aggressively and chose to just go low with two spades, which is, in my view, when you're playing match points, I don't think that pushing to game is actually very valuable. I think you're much better off stopping low and trying to take more tricks than the opponents. Anyway, so my partner chose to bid two spades. That's also not the lesson of the hand. And it went three clubs on my right. And now I have a ninth trump, so I competed to three spades. And when I bid three spades, I was not inviting my partner to game. I was just saying, partner, I would rather declare three spades than defend three clubs. This was just a law of total tricks situation where I knew my side had nine trumps and my opponents had at least eight, which means that it's always going to be right for, or usually going to be right for me to bid three spades because it means there's 17 total tricks available. So if I go down one, that means I took eight tricks. That means that they were going to make their 110. And if I make my three spades for nine tricks, that means we were only going to get 50 against three clubs. So whenever you have that ninth trump, you do compete to three over three typically, unless there's something that's screaming not to, like you have a lot of points in the opponent's suit. So the key to this lesson that I was discussing about the bidding is that my three spade bid had absolutely no invitational meaning. My partner is not allowed to bid over three spades. And I think this is a common mistake that people in the North Chair experience where they're like, wow, my partner bid three and I have the best hand that I could possibly have. I should bid four. That would be a big no-no. You're not allowed to bid four spades when partner competes to three over three. If South wanted to invite game, they'd have to find a different bid to make. They'd make the most natural bid they could make between three diamonds and three hearts. Those would say to partner, I'm interested in game. If you have a good hand, go to game. If you don't, stop. But when you compete to three over three, you're not allowed to bid four. So before you go ahead and watch the rest of the video, play the handout with the interactive feature on wolpertbridge.com by clicking play all hands. And if you're watching this on YouTube, you can find the link in the description to the problem. Okay, so here we are. We have to play in three spades. And the way I like to approach these trump suit hands is I like to count my losers in the long hand. And when I'm looking, I'm probably got one, possibly two spade losers on a terrible day. Heart loser, two club loser. Very important. We acknowledge that we have a second club loser and a diamond loser. So I'm starting with quite a few losers. Call it one spade. We're going to be at the whim of how they break. One heart loser, two club losers is four, and a diamond is five. We have to get rid of at least one loser. And when I look, the first thing I see, because one of the first things I look for is I see that I might be able to trump club in the shorthand, and that will get rid of one of my losers. And that seems likely to be successful because they've bid and raised clubs. So West has five clubs and East has three. So there's not much chance I'm going to get overruffed on the third round of clubs. Great. But I don't stop there. Are there any other losers that I might be able to get rid of? Well, let's see. Could I get rid of my heart loser? There's a chance I could set up the diamonds to get rid of my five of hearts. But how will that have to happen? I would have to win the club, play ace of diamonds, spin a diamond, and then I'd have to get back over to dummy, maybe with the ace of spades and trump a diamond. And then if the diamonds are 3-3, maybe the diamonds are good, but then I still have this issue that I would have to finish drawing trumps before roughing a club to dummy to enjoy the diamonds. That seems like a pipe dream. But on the other hand, I see a way I might be able to get rid of my diamond loser, and that is with the queen of hearts. If I try playing ace of hearts and a heart up towards the queen early on this hand, I could then use the queen of hearts to throw away a diamond. So I have a few things I have to do. I want to rough a club and dummy. Obviously, I want to draw trumps, and I want to try to throw away the diamond. So I have to figure out which order to do those in. What is the most important place to start? And the thing is, on this hand, there is the most urgent thing that we need to do is we need to set up a heart. Because the moment we let our opponents in, they can shift to diamonds and set up their diamond trick. And if they do that, then by the time we knock out the king of hearts, they will be able to take the diamond. So we can't let them in. So we start this hand by winning the ace of clubs. Even if we duck the club at trick one, which some people may have done, that gives them the time to immediately shift to diamonds. They're going to say, okay, well, we have no future in clubs. What should we do? And they're going to pick a suit to shift to. And if it's diamonds, then we've already lost our opportunity to get rid of our diamond. So we win the ace of clubs. And what we have to do is immediately play a heart to the ace and a heart up towards the queen. And now they win their king of hearts. And some defenders right now might just cash the king of clubs, in which case the hand gets even a little bit simpler. I asked the robots to shift to the queen of diamonds to make your life a little bit more difficult. So what you have to do now is you have to win the ace of diamonds and you have to play a spade up to dummy's ace. And you might say, but now I might not be able to rough a club. And you're right about that. You might not be able to rough a club because what's going to happen is we're going to take our sure discard of the diamond and now we're going to play a club. And it's possible that they might play king of spades and a spade. But in the process, at least we got rid of our diamond loser. So we might end up losing a club, but we didn't lose a diamond. The worst thing that can happen now is we break even. But on this hand, what they would do is they would play the king of diamonds back, and we'd trump it, and now we trump our club. And finally, the thing we usually like to do first, we do near the end here, is not draw trumps. So on this hand, the best you could do was take 10 tricks. And that's making game. So those of you who bid four with that north hand, maybe you would have gotten a better score. But the key is that on this hand, I got a huge result just for taking 10 tricks by attacking the hearts first, before drawing trumps, before trying to do the club rough. Just recognizing which order to do things in earned me, I believe, an 85 or 90% board by attacking the hearts first. So when you have 10 ups to 10, nobody's in game. You don't need to be in game. The key is just to take as many tricks as you possibly can. That's how you win at match points, is play the same contract as everybody else and just play it a trick better than them. Easier said than done.
I'm glad we got to go over some bridge stuff. See you next time.
Hey listeners, to help you out, jump onto YouTube, look up Gavin Wolpert Interactive Problem Number 20 and have a look at it. If you'd like to send us an email about that, did you come up with the same plan to make the most out of this hand? Let us know, bridgezoneshuffle@gmail.com. Yes, we've had some feedback. They had one of your margarine
contracts.
Yeah, which didn't work out well for them. But hey,
I can't believe I'm not doubled, okay? Even not being doubled, it still didn't work out well for them. There you go.
Yeah. Keep the emails coming, people. We know the margarine effect is out there.
I never saw you playing in Hamilton on Sunday.
No. We had family come down from Auckland on Sunday.
So they're having the last round of the Waikato Area Pairs there. So that was won by Leslie Quilty and Noel Grigg from Matamata.
Oh, cool. The Waikato Area Pairs is played over how many events?
Look, I didn't play in it. I believe it was five or six.
Yeah, that sounds
and
about
And I think you get to drop one, drop your worst one. Leslie's won that many times, I'm sure.
Has she? So yeah.
She won it again on the weekend, so good for them.
Oh, wow. Oh, hello, Noel. I know you're a listener. I haven't seen you in a while. Congratulations, Noel and Leslie.
I've caught up a bit with Noel lately. I saw him last weekend and again this weekend. I'm not too sure he's going to be the following weekend at the Waikato. I think he might be. He might be playing again. Maybe he's coming out of retirement and he's, you know, launching his new career.
Yeah. The Billy Tuchel and what was the other event in Auckland?
Oh, the Rose Bowl.
Yeah. I couldn't find the results for that.
The winners were Jeremy Fraser-Hoskins and Tamati Gregg.
Very cool.
Young fella. Not much older than your grandson.
Wow.
So they got up. They had a 71 in the second round to get up and beat Blair and Liz Fisher by a smidgen.
Oh, right.
That was the official winning margin was one smidgen, I believe.
Oh, you can't get closer than that, can you? Well done.
For the Rose Bowl, the intermediate section was won by Kerry McCrae and Dorleach.
Yep. I think they're turning up in Hamilton this weekend.
Oh, that's good. I was talking to a few people saying, well, you need to get down there, but it looks like everybody, every man and his dog is coming to Hamilton to play the 10A Swiss Pairs on the weekend.
Such a good tournament.
It's always popular. The Swiss Pairs is just such a good, you know, such a popular format.
Yeah.
I know there's a lot of people that don't like it and it can be quite random, but hey, if people want to play in it, well, we just need to do it.
Okay. Well, that's about it from us. Congratulations to the new world champs and also Matt Brown and Michael Whibley. They came runner-up in the transnational.
Silver medal for them.
And speaking of Matthew Brown, if you want to click on to Sorry Partner, the podcast done by the two American ladies, they actually had a chat with him 2 weeks ago. And one of Matt's goals is to win a world championship. So he is well on his way. FYI, remember last year they actually came runner-up at a World Champs as well. He's really knocking on the door, isn't he? So check that out. And thanks to all of our NZ representatives that went over there. Well done to all the team members.
When do we get the judge back? I don't think she's back next week, is it? It's the week after, is it?
She's due back on the 11th. Patrick comes home tomorrow.
Or we might have the bailiff on next week if we can drag him onto the air.
I'm sure he'll be able to give us some fantastic stories about Denmark. And hey, there's this great new tournament that's available on either Funbridge or BBO. And yet you may have to part a little bit from your wallet. I'm not too sure how much it's going to cost you, but you've got to be in to win. So here is a intro to that. Courtesy of Peter Hollands.
G'day, it's Pete here, and today I wanted to tell you about a new tournament that's coming up. It's the first of its kind. It's the eBridge Cup. It's a tournament that's run on both BBO and Funbridge and has genuine prize money that you can win. So I'm going to be giving it a shot and see how it goes, and you can follow along with me, or you can also jump in, give it a shot yourself. So what is it? So the eBridge Cup is a tournament that runs over a few months and can be... So what there is it goes for 3 months. There is a qualifying month where you can play a bunch of tournaments. There's a semi-finals month and then a finals week. And for this, what it is the qualifying happens in September. It's going to start basically today, depending on when you actually view this video. But there's tournaments that run all throughout this month, and you can play as many of them as you like. And what happens is it takes your best 10 scores from this. And if you qualify as the top 500 players on BBO or the top 500 players on Funbridge, you progress to the semifinals. And then there's more tournaments for the October. And then if you're in the top 100, you get to go into the finals, which happen in November. If you miss out on making the semi-finals here, there's also the E-Cup 2, where you can also win prize money in that as well. So for the main event, if you win the whole thing, you get $5,000 and 2.5 for second and 1.5 for third. If you're playing in the E-Cup 2, you actually get $1,000 for first. There's a total prize pool of $15,000. So I'm going to be jumping in and see how it goes. So give it a shot if you haven't seen. If you want to sign up for these, this can be done. On BBO, you can find it by going to special events and then looking for eBridge Cup first qualifier or whatever qualifier it's up to. On FunBridge, you'll be able to see it in events here, or this tab here is also the events one, and then you just look for the eBridge Cup. So I'm keen to give it a shot. Let me know if you're jumping in, and also how do you actually think I will go? Anyway, I'll be posting some tournaments, so hope you enjoy it, and we'll see you around.
That's all from us, folks. Take care at the table.
Bye for now.
New Zealand Bridge, sponsoring bridge from beginner to international nationwide. This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.